So this is two bhakti riksha groups in one, is that right?
Yes.
At least two. Two plus. And I understand, at least in one of the groups, maybe in both of the groups, you just finished the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, right? So that means if I ask you some questions about the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, you can answer, right? Surprise! It's quiz time.
Some of them are only just 1 week old.
Oh.
Only few of them, two or three.
Okay. So, who are some of the ones that have completed the entire introduction to Bhagavad Gita? No one put their hand up.
Be honest.
When dishonesty is rolled up, the hands go up. So, how about this? We'll just ask for some volunteers. Out of your reading and your study of the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, could you say one thing that particularly stood out or impressed you or made a strong impression out of this very rich and thick and creamy and juicy introduction to Bhagavad Gita? One thing. Just one thing. Yes.
We are not just boys. We are like part and parcels of Krishna. So, I mean, after coming to this class, I understand that we are part and parcels of Krishna. We are souls. And when we hear more about Krishna, when we sing about Krishna, when we do all close things to Krishna, then we'll be reaching Krishna, where we'll have all happiness. We don't have old age.
Birth starts with birth. Okay. That's a mouthful. You got a good dose of Bhagavad Gita before you even began, just the introduction. You had your hand up. Yes.
I would say the same thing.
Same thing. Any variation on the same thing? Any variation?
Yeah, like the basic thing is like you have to get a very good faith.
Okay. Role of faith.
Faith is very important. Then due to association, singing,
okay,
and chanting, this all includes of devotion. Then keep faith in Krishna.
Fantastic. Since faith is so important, where do you get it?
We build relationship with Krishna.
Yeah, but where does that? How do we get that relationship with Krishna? Faith. Where do we? Walmart doesn't have any, right? Where do you get it?
Chanting.
Yeah. And association with devotees. So you had your hand up?
Yeah. What I learned from the introduction is like abhyasam. Like practicing.
Practicing.
Practicing and chanting.
Okay. Okay. Okay, that's a good message to get from the introduction. Yes?
We also got the clarity between the material world and the spiritual universe. The explanation is given how the spiritual universe looks like and how the material world is. And from the introduction, we were actually able to differentiate and where we are, you know, the whole concept of how we came. You know,
very good.
All pieces are together.
That's like, you know, an elaboration upon what she said. Our real identity is on the spiritual side and we're not the material side. And then how does the whole shebang get started? How does this come together with that? And how does a material existence begin that tells us how to do a retreat into the spiritual existence again? Good.
I also have one more.
Okay, go ahead.
Another good thing I options available out there. And then we got a good clarity on, you know, there are different types of realization, the Brahman realization, you know.
Paramatma and Bhagavan. Okay.
And Bhakti Marga is the real one to go. And then the beyond all the realizations is the Krishna realization. So sticking to that is the way to
go. Okay. Way to go. Good going.
We actually made our mind, you know, ready for the introduction. We got focused.
Okay. Wow. I should have come to your classes. It sounds like you got really prepared. Anyone else? How about any of the kids?
Well, I don't know if I'm a kid, but...
You're somewhere in between. You're a special category.
One of the things that I really liked was how Bhagavad Gita says it's a mystery. And it could only be understood under proper guidance, under a benefit.
A mystery master.
Yeah. So it's just the importance of guidance. We can't understand Bhagavad Gita on ourselves.
Really? It says that in the introduction, huh?
I know it says Bhagavad Gita is a mystery and we have to
Okay. Very good. You're not volunteering. I'm calling on you. Yeah. Volume up, please.
We have that we can only understand the Gita, their association and also
association.
Guidance.
And guidance. Okay. Anyone else out there? You're volunteering, or?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, why not? Okay.
What we learned is this first time I realized by thinking and coming to the class that it is clarifying more on my thoughts, and first time I realized that association of Devi devotee is so
essential.
So good and so fulfilling, you know. That's so
not only it said that in the book, but it said that was in your heart.
In the heart, exactly. And first time I realized that it is so simple. It is not that difficult to follow with the help of association. By looking around, it is
nice.
Not just bookish, it is, you can do it in practical.
Let me ask you, when you were growing up sometime in your education, you took some classes and studying Bhagavad Gita, right?
No.
Never.
No, never.
Okay.
Actually, I used to go. When I was growing up, we used to have a Bhagavatam classes. Once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to go with my mom.
Okay. Well, many people have said this that. Gee, I used to read Bhagavad Gita, I took classes in Bhagavad Gita, I studied Bhagavad Gita, and I never understood Bhagavad Gita. But just by coming to these Bhakti Riksha groups, it's very clear.
It's very clear, yes.
It's actually very easy, and it's very nice, and it's very practical.
Very practical, yes.
And I feel really good about this. You know, I'm like, hey, I'm making a little progress finally to understand this very important classical literature, Bhagavad Gita. Okay, good. Okay, now I'm going to ask some other questions. Uh-oh. I'll try a little challenging one first, so you're intimidated. No, I won't do that. I'll offer it first. The answer to the question: to whom did Prabhupada dedicate the Bhagavad Gita, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita? Answer. You're not sure.
To his spiritual master.
Hmm. One of the members of our disciplic succession, he dedicated it unto. Baladev. Vidyabhusan. What is it about Baladev Vidyabhusan that particularly inspired Srila Prabhupada to dedicate his Bhagavad Gita commentary to Baladev Vidyabhushan? What was it about Baladev Vidyabhushan? Yeah?
He read the commentary on the
correct
chapter, the second chapter, Bhakti
Bhanda. Yeah. Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also commented similarly. But Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just like in our disciplic succession, the little series of pictures in the front, Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and Jagannath Das Babaji, they're pictured on those little pictures. Contemporary with Jagannath Das Babaji was Baladev Vidyabhushan. Baladev Vidyabhushan, on behalf of this disciplic succession, wrote the commentary on Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra, which every disciplic succession must have. And prior to him, it wasn't done because it was understood by Lord Chaitanya himself that you don't need a commentary on Vedanta Sutra because the author himself made his own commentary. Srimad Bhagavatam, or Bhagavat Purana, is the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. But some other Vaishnavas were saying, oh, you should have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So, circumstantially, under the dictation of Govindaji in Jaipur, he wrote the commentary on Vedanta Sutra called Govindabhasya. Just like Ramanujacharya's commentary is called Sri Bhasya, because the goddess of fortune dictated or supplied that knowledge. So Govindaji, personally, the deity, dictated, and he was like Ganesh, just writing it down, the scribe, the inspirations from Govindaji, so it was called Govindabhasya. And similarly, he wrote, as important as Bhagavad Gita is, there are not so many principal commentaries that are on Bhagavad Gita that are considered outstanding, particularly for our disciplic succession. But the two that Srila Prabhupada relied upon most strongly are Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So those pictures again, Jagannath Das Babaji is the last one on our right. Contemporary with him was was Baladev, and prior to him was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So those two, Vishwanath and Baladev, wrote verse by verse commentaries on every verse of the entire Bhagavad Gita. So when Prabhupada was doing his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he was referring to both of those primarily. There were others, but primarily those two. And of the two, primarily Baladev Vidyabhushan, because as he gave the commentary of Vedanta Sutra, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita also stood for the commentary of our disciplic succession. He took it that way. And there was something very special about his commentary, as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, that inspired Prabhupada particularly. That is, this Vyavasayatmika Bhutir Ekeha Kuru Nandana Bhushakayanantasya Bhutaya Vyavasayinam. That verse from Bhagavad Gita, where Bhuti Yoga, or single minded determination in the execution of the duties of life, is achieved for one who has implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. That inspired Prabhupada very much, particularly that his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta, had given him an instruction. Take this knowledge and deliver it to the English-speaking parts of the world. So he was working on an English commentary from the Sanskrit commentaries of our predecessor Acharyas for the English-speaking parts of the world. But it's not just write the book, go and deliver it. So he then, the resolve, Prabhupada described to us, his disciples later, I then knew I must go, not just write the commentary, but I must go. At the ripe age of 70 years old, get on a boat and go across the Atlantic Ocean and take his Bhagavad Gita and deliver it to the English-speaking parts of the world. So the slingshot, the propellant, was the commentary of these two great acharyas. And so Prabhupada followed the line of Baladeva and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and especially Baladeva. So now another question. I'll ask the question, then I'll frame the question and come back and ask the question again. The question is, the classic form that Baladeva followed in giving his Bhagavad Gita commentary was that he indicated that Bhagavad Gita addresses five topics. What are those five topics of Bhagavad Gita? Don't you know what? I'm going to frame the question and then say, ask the question again. Following tradition, because Baladeva was trained in a very traditional way. Baladeva, as a young boy, I see a young boy or two here. When he was just a young boy, he was very inspired to go the path of spiritual life. But he was just a young boy, so he did his studies at home. But when he was of mature age, he requested of his father, I'd like to go find a spiritual teacher. And his father could see in the child this not ordinary, extraordinary spiritual interest and drive and inclination, acumen. He's a very brilliant young boy. So, with some reservation, some reluctance, he understood, if he goes to find a teacher, who knows, I may never see him again, but at the same time, this is his nature, I have to permit. So he gave his blessings. And Baladeva went here and there and all over South India, because he was originally from Orissa. He ended up near, Madhvacharya's principal mutt is in Udupi. So not in Udupi, but near Udupi, there was a line of Madhvacharya that goes back from Baladeva's time, over 1,000 years. And it was a very strong group of teachers, renunciates, sannyasis, and others, because Madhvacharya also honored grihasthas that were enthusiastic to participate in spiritual life, as well as sannyasis enthusiastic to participate in spiritual life. That was his model. And so he became very inspired by that particular place, requested to become a student. He became a student, and he became thoroughly learned in Madhvacharya's line of teaching. So what was, and it's, so it's classic. A classic form is that there are principal doctrines, or it's called in Sanskrit, vada, that when one sees anything that's from the scriptures, one can see it through the lens of that particular vada or doctrine. So what was Madhvacharya's vada or doctrine? It wasn't peace, it was this one. Dvaita Vada. So Dvaita Vada, the doctrine of Madhvacharya, upon which he commented on everything. From the beginning, the middle, and the final teaching that he gave when he gave up his body was speaking on this called Pancha Veda. Everything was permeated with this way of viewing things. So Veda means difference, Abheda means non-difference, and Bheda means difference. So Panchabheda was his doctrine. There's a difference, a fundamental difference between various tattvas or realities. Panchabheda. So there's a difference between the living entity and God, Jiva and Ishvara. There's a living difference between Prakriti and God, Ishvara. There's a difference between Prakriti and Prakriti, types of Prakriti. Difference between Jiva and Jiva. The Jivas are individual. And the difference between Prakriti and Jiva. And his teachings are, because, you know, Dvaitavad. And Ramanujacharya had his principal doctrine, Vashishta Advaita Vad. And everything he taught was permeated with that idea. Or even more contemporary is, in our line of disciplic succession, is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had a theme that appears, I just discovered this from reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. His theme, and this is classic, you know, the lens through which you see everything, that there are 10 essential teachings that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. He called it Dasa Mula. Mula means root. And Dasa means 10. So 10 essential teachings or root teachings that are throughout all of the Vedas. And he derived that perspective from Baladeva Vidyabhushan, who had this Prameya Ratnavali, which came also from Jamunacharya. He had a similar set of teachings. So he again and again and again, as a refrain, spoke about the 10 essential teachings that are found within the Vedas as revealed by Lord Chaitanya. It's not that Lord Chaitanya had a catechism or classes where he would, okay, here's the 10 teachings, and would teach them over and over. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was the lens through which he saw Lord Chaitanya's teachings and the teaching of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And I gave a course in Vrindavan that lasted a month on Dasamula Tattva. It was very interesting. At the end, after the class had learned what they were, we did some application. We took, you know, some, asked them to pick some inspirational literature. We ended up, one of the things we did was took the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. 10th canto, chapter 2. And then we identified which of the Dasamula is spoken in every line. Every line, every line, every line. Comprehensively, everything can be understood by those 10 essential teachings. It's amazing. It covers everything in spiritual knowledge. So now similarly, in Baladeva Vidyabhushan's writing, his lens was there are 5 essential topics, not only in Bhagavad Gita, but in any spiritual teaching that you can come across. There are 5 essential tattvas, or topics, that are addressed, and Bhagavad Gita speaks of them. Okay, so that's the frame. Now the question again. What are those 5 topics? See the hands again? 1, 2, 3. Wow. Pancho, you know? No? Well, let's impress the adults. Go ahead. You say 3 of them and you say the other 2 that she doesn't say first. 3. Purusha, Prakriti,
Karma,
Kala, and Jiva. That's the 5 topics. So what I'm going to do in review of the introduction to Bhagavad Gita that you've just completed, those 5 topics are discussed. Directly referring to Baladeva Vidyabhushan, because it's upon his commentary that Prabhupada wrote his Bhagavad Gita introduction and all the Bhagavad Gita, and he honors Baladev that way. So the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust has put together a very nice interactive, Bhagavad Gita interactive they call it. So there's it's graphics and music and very nicely done. That my experience is even Western college students that don't know anything about Bhagavad Gita can learn about Bhagavad Gita. And those that think they know all about Bhagavad Gita, they can also learn about Bhagavad Gita by that very nice Bhagavad Gita interactive. So we'll spend a little bit of time taking a look at Bhagavad Gita interactive. And someone may have to adjust the volume because it's got a volume control. Just make sure, put your hand on the volume control, and when it comes, it's not too loud, not too soft, but just right. And I hope the signal works. Hang on. It's warming up. There we go. Run through the introduction because it's
in the beginning. Krishna says that I have selected you as my student because you are my friend and you are my devotee. So, in other words, we can understand that Bhagavad Gita can be understood who has intimate relationship with Krishna.
Okay, now hopefully it will play the introduction for you because it's really good.
Friends were poised on the verge of a deadly war. Arjuna, the warrior prince, refused to oppose an army led by corrupt members of his own family. And Krishna, Arjuna's charioteer, who illuminated his friend's heart, dispelling all doubt with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. The result was Bhagavad Gita, classic spiritual dialogue between the Supreme Lord and his eternal friend, yielding a wealth of timeless wisdom that will enrich your life even today.
Indexes on the left side, and the five topics are right here. But there's many interesting things. You can read the book, you can hear the book, there are chapter summaries of the book. There's a list of analogies that are used in the book and the commentary. Here's the five topics: Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. The five topics that Baladeva presents in Bhagavad Gita. Since two of you said that one of the things that you learned was we're not this body, but we're a spirit soul, let's cover this one and material nature, which we aren't, but we're surrounded by.
The jiva is the living entity, you, the soul, the consciousness, the subtle energy, the self. In the second chapter, Lord Krishna teaches Arjuna that the jiva is indestructible, eternal, and has no past, present, or future. The jiva is transcendental to the material body and material world. You, the living soul, are not the body. The atomic living entity is situated within the heart and is 1/10,000th the part of a tip of a hair in size. Spirit souls are everywhere, in the air, the water, the earth, and even the fire. As the sun is situated in one place but illuminates the whole universe, so the atomic spirit soul, although situated in the heart of this body, illuminates the whole body with consciousness. The symptom of the soul's presence is perceived as individual consciousness. Soul has passed from the body, there is no more consciousness. The embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age. The soul then goes into another body at death. This is like putting on new clothes, giving up old ones. The soul cannot be cut by a weapon, nor affected by any element of nature. The eternal spirit soul is naturally blissful, but this blissfulness cannot manifest when one is entrapped by nescience. Only when one revives his loving relationship with the Lord can one realize this happiness. Soul is eternally part of the Supreme Lord, yet always remains an individual and never becomes one with or equal to the Lord. The Supreme Lord and the soul are intimately related as friends. The living entity can be situated either in the material nature or in the spiritual nature. He is the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is eager to take the soul back to the spiritual sky and always gives instruction from within and without. The liberated soul, although present in this material world, is not under the control of material nature and is only interested in going to the spiritual sky. These great souls perpetually worship the Lord with devotion. One who is transcendentally situated is free from envy and false ego and exhibits the qualities of tolerance and self-control. One who has thus transcended material nature regards a piece of gold and a stone, the desirable and the undesirable, with an equal eye. As the tortoise can withdraw its limbs into the shell, the liberated soul is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects. Even one of the roaming senses can carry away a man's intelligence, like a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind. The liberated soul understands the purpose of the Vedas or any religious scripture and is not attached to the rituals only. Liberated soul realizes the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Arjuna takes the place of the conditioned soul. He becomes overwhelmed with sorrow and lamentation on seeing his friends and relatives on the battlefield ready to fight. Four types of impious people who don't surrender to the Lord. For the sinful soul, devotional life to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Those who are impious glide down to hell via lust, anger, and greed. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by the fire of lust. There are four kinds of pious souls who begin to render devotional service unto the Lord. This material world is sometimes regarded as a blazing forest fire and sometimes as an ocean of nescience. If someone comes forward and lifts the struggling soul from the ocean, he is the greatest savior. One must seek out such a spiritual master and learn what liberated consciousness is. Although Arjuna was overwhelmed with false grief, he surrendered unto Krishna, the supreme spiritual master. Thus he was enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization. Consists of three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. The spirit soul is bewildered by the influence of false ego and thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by these three aspects of nature. All activities are colored by these three modes. All elements in this material world, such as food, can be of three kinds. The mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Passion conditions one to fruitive action. And ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Symptoms of the mode of ignorance are inertia, madness, violence, distress, and worship of dead spirits. The mode of passion springs from unlimited desires and longings. Thus, the embodied living entity is bound to material actions. The mode of goodness is purer than the others. It illuminates one and frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. One's tendency towards a particular type of work is determined by the combination of these three modes of material nature. Materialists cannot understand Lord Krishna spiritually. However, they can try to see the presence of the Lord in the different aspects of the material manifestation.
If you like classical music, you'd like this very much. It was prepared for a Western audience, assuming that they knew nothing of Bhagavad Gita and they wouldn't so much relate to traditional Indian music, so it was Mozart. But in visual image, and that, since you are familiar with the introduction of Bhagavad Gita now, I'm sure you heard little sound bites that are taken directly from the introduction, the message of Bhagavad Gita, and then depicting it visually. So, now that you've completed the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, you've been introduced to the main message, the five main topics, you've been introduced to Baladev Vidyabhushan, you've been introduced to Srila Prabhupada and his way of presentation. Now you're ready for chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita. And I'm sure as you go along, you'll find the topics will be more and more illuminating. Stick with it. And by the time you've finished Bhagavad Gita 18 chapters, you'll say, wow, just like you shared, now I'm starting to understand Bhagavad Gita. And then after 18 chapters, wow, now I'm starting to understand Bhagavad Gita. I think I want to go back and read it again so I can really understand Bhagavad Gita better. Now I have the building blocks. And it's something like, learning your addition, subtraction, and multiplication and division tables. And after you get that down, then you go back and then you can really start doing math. So go through it one time very carefully together. in the association of devotees, because it's very valuable to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita in that way. It's actually meant to be understood in that way, by hearing it and by discussing the topics. And as the introduction described, the message becomes illumined within the heart, as it became illumined within the heart of Arjuna. And at the end, Arjuna was ready, whatever Krishna wished him to do. And one of the key things that helped him, of course, was Krishna's association, but the identification with Prakriti was eliminated, and instead his identification with the soul, in practical terms. In practical terms. So practical were those practical terms that Krishna, Arjuna was only able to see on the spiritual platform. He knew what his material duties were, but he was fully on the spiritual platform, as he did all of what he did. Okay, so any comments or questions or thoughts or anything about the Bhagavad Gita introduction you want to bring up? We'll spend some time with that. Yes.
Regarding the Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya, the different mothers they had, so why are there? Krishna, everything was conveyed much before of the time. So how come there are different mothers around?
I'll give two answers. Why are there different relationships with Krishna? Because we're all individual. So we have individual relationships with Krishna. So let's say you and I may commonly know Sachi Kumar. And how you view Sachi Kumar is in a certain way. And how I view Sachi Kumar is in a different way, but he's still Sachi Kumar. And when you're describing Sachi Kumar and something that you heard from Sachi Kumar, you'll describe it in a certain way. And hearing the same thing, I'll perhaps describe it in a different way. It doesn't change the message, provided the lens is transparent. I'll give another example, right from Bhagavad Gita and from Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 7, it describes there are 5 separated material energies and 3 subtle energies. 5 gross, 3 subtle. Bhumir, Apo nalo vayu kamano bhutir evacha ahankara. So that's 8. 5 and 3 makes 8. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's 5. Those are the gross elements. And mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, this comprises my material energy, separated material energy. Bina, prakriti, ashtada. My eightfold separated energies. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking. Now we'll go to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Katila is describing to Devahuti, this material energy, Sankhya philosophy, is made up of 24 elements. Included is those 8, and then it gives another 24 minus 8. Additional categories. So what's going on? Is it 8 or is it 24? Is this one right or is that one right? And the answer is they're both right. It's just a different way of looking at it. Give another example. I'm going to have to go back to New York. Well, I don't have to go back, but I'm going to be going back to New York. So to get back to New York, I could drive, I could fly, I could take a train, and if I want to just like find out how to get from Washington to New York, I can look on a Rand McNally road map, or I can look on a globe that's three-dimensional, or I can get a, whatever you call those little machines, GPS thing, and have somebody, now turn left. You're approaching a light, turn left. Recalculating. So I can, you know, there's a number of ways. Three-dimensional, two-dimensional, virtual, you know, from a satellite to get from point A to point B. Which of them is right? The answer is they're all right, provided you get from point A to point B. They're accurate depictions. So, as acharyas, they're individuals, and they're going to the same scripture and seeing according to us, you know, their relationship with the Supreme Lord. Now there's two other things. Two other things are, there's a certain time in which they were writing, and they were addressing a certain audience. Desha, kala, and patra. Time, place, circumstance. So they knew their audience, and according to time, place, and circumstance, they addressed their audience, appropriate to their audience. And there was also a place they wanted to take their audience. So prevalent at the time was the teaching of Shankaracharya. So Ramanujacharya, following the Alvars and the Sri Sampradaya teachings, he presented a comprehensive view where the attributes of the Supreme, his teaching says, they're inherent within the Supreme. So Vishishta Advaita. We should not see the material world as false, which Shankara taught. It's true. It's true because it's an attribute of the Supreme, but it's temporarily manifest. Vishishta Advaita. But Madhvacharya, his relationship with the Supreme was, no, that's not strong enough, because some people may still think, okay, then, you know, everything is Supreme. But there is this distinction. He wanted, like, you know, smash this impersonal idea completely. Doesn't go far enough. Panchabheda. No. So he was of a his mood, his relationship with the Supreme. The commonness is they're worshippers of the Supreme Lord. So they're Vaishnavas. So there's the commonness and there's the distinction. And distinction and variety is part of the spiritual world. It's not only allowed, it's there. When Krishna was in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, the residents of Vrindavan were terribly bereaving. Krishna's in difficulty. Mother Jasoda and Mother Jasoda wanted to run into the Kaliya lake and save Krishna because that's my son. And the wives had to, or the queen, excuse me, the women of the elder gopis had to hold her back. Nandamara is saying, with these powerful arms, I'll subdue that Kaliya. I'll show you. Balaram had to stop him. And Balaram was just laughing. Same scene. And his understanding, Krishna's just enjoying. Don't worry. He's all powerful. Don't worry. It's just he's having fun. And Krishna was having fun. But after, anyway, there's variety of seeing the same thing because of the relation, different relationship with Krishna. Not only allowed, it's perfectly natural. The end result is go to Krishna. There's more to be said, but you know that's a good start.
So
So the acharyas actually created that for the...
They were inspired by the Supreme Lord from within their heart and following the line of their sampradaya. I mean, Ramanujacharya didn't just like pull something out of the air or creatively, you know, draft something. He received it. And Madhvacharya also received it. He went to Vyasadeva to verify his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And it was confirmed, Vyasa approved. So, you know, receiving and descending chain is essential. So they didn't like conjure up something. Hey, I think that's a nice idea. Let's try that one out for a while. It wasn't speculative. Philosophy is descending knowledge. And so they presented it in a certain way, to describe what the scriptures say, how we can understand the truth of existence, God, the living entity, material nature, time, activity. Okay? Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class.
I'm ready for a special question. You're a special question person.
Okay. When one kills an animal and eats, is that guaranteed that he gets the body of that animal in the next birth or whatever? Or do we consider, is it a sin? Or if you pray God, your concentration is on God, and you eat meat, will that sin affect you, or if you pray God and sacrifice, saying, I'm sacrificing this, and eat, still you get sin or no?
What do you think? You don't know?
I don't know.
Okay. How about this? I punch you in your face and say, "Dear God, I hope you don't mind." I just punch this thing. I got a little angry, you know. And I punch him in the face. Or go to a judge and say, you know, "I didn't mean, Your Honor, I just didn't like the look on his face that day, so I punched him in the face. I got angry. I said I was sorry. And I prayed to God." What's the judge going to say? Assault. And here's your penalty. So now, can we neutralize reactions? It's, let's say, you know, out of all the persons in the room, without asking, you know, who in the past has had that misfortune of eating meat in their life, some number of persons may have had that misfortune. Now, is that means okay? Then it's irreversible. You're going to take birth as an animal, or however many animals. And according to the Vedic scripture, for every hair on the head, for every hair on the body of the animal, you'll take that many births and be killed. That's a lot of hairs. Think of McDonald's and, you know, where they're sending people. Not a good place. But if someone can genuinely recognize the mistake, not continue the same activity, but recognizing the mistake and seek shelter of the personality of Godhead, that can absolve them of such horrible activities. Never do such horrible activities again in the name of praying to God that it's okay. Now, one other thing. is the personality of Godhead knows that we have free will and we may properly use it and we may misuse it. And so within the Vedic literature, as well as within the Quran and other scriptures, there's means of sacrifice where under certain, not animal slaughter slaughterhouses, but under very restricted conditions in the Vedic tradition, under the dark moon night, that's once a month, and in the dead of night with a qualified priest before the Devi, one can make a sacrifice of a particular animal, a goat, not other animals, or certainly not cows. Then one can be freed from reaction. But the Brahmana, Prabhupada would quote this, that mamsa, the Brahmana utters this mantra that says, as I am killing you, so you may kill me. One may not take the body of that animal, but one is making a commitment to that animal, the soul within that animal, as I am killing you, you may have, they may not exercise the option, but you have the option to also kill me. So it reduces the sentence, and that's as far as you go with karmakanda ritual, with animal sacrifice. So it's not best not to play with fire. And what if I play with fire like this? I won't get burned? Mm-hmm. Best not to play with fire. Yeah.
In Bhagavad Gita, does this point is discussed somewhere or not?
In two places, not specific to your question, but Krishna does indicate what is offerable to him, patram pushpam palam toyam, and foods in general, foods in the quality of goodness, he identifies, and foods in the quality of goodness are offerable to him, and those that offer their food first unto him and accept the remnants of what is offered to him, Krishna directly says in Bhagavad Gita, they're freed from any reaction. And conversely, those that don't, with every mouthful, they're eating sin. And you have to eat just to sustain your life, so best to not eat too much. But far better is take prasad. Take that which is first offered to Krishna. He speaks like that in Bhagavad Gita. Yes?
How about trees?
Okay. Okay. And let me ask you, you ever had apples?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And when you take an apple, what happens to the tree?
It's pain to the tree.
But are you taking the life of the tree?
No.
Okay.
But still, we are taking from the tree.
Yeah, you're taking from the tree. But let me ask you this. When you take that apple from the tree and you offer it to Krishna, what happens to the soul within the body of that tree? He's just rendered some service to Krishna. He was just standing there. You came along and poof, and you offered the apple to Krishna. Now he's just done some service to Krishna. He gets spiritual benefit. Now if you were the tree, and someone came along and offered one of your apples unto Krishna, and you get spiritual benefit, how would you feel about that? Hey, take a bunch more. As long as you offer them to Krishna, and I'll get spiritual benefit, and you get spiritual benefit, and Krishna's pleased. It's a triple win. Good program.
But what about the trees itself, that sometimes you eat a lot of vegetables, not only, for example, spinach, but the existing tree itself, you cut it and...
But the root is still there. it'll grow another spinach leaf. Right? No? You pull the wheat? Okay. Okay. So let's say, we'll go a little further. Carrots, potatoes, things that, you know, the life is taken. And the soul can no longer inhabit that potato body, carrot body, spinach body. There's other things that you don't take the life. The wheat and so on. You don't take the life. It's just naturally... So what the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita is not specifically be vegetarian. The advocacy of Bhagavad Gita is offer everything to Krishna and take only that which is offered to Krishna. Because when you offer to Krishna that which is in the category of the quality of goodness, that soul within that potato, spinach, carrot, whatever, is spiritually benefited so much that many, 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 many evolutionary stages they pass over very quickly and move towards the human form of life. You're benefiting the soul as that soul is providing through their spinach, potato, or carrot body something that's offered to Krishna. But if you're just vegetarian, then what you're saying is true. The soul isn't benefited, and you've taken the life of that, the body that that soul was inhabiting, for your sustenance, for, you know, for yourself. But if it's offered to Krishna, the consequence for you and for that soul is altogether different. So therefore, we're not a vegetarian movement, we're a Krishna consciousness movement. Whatever you do should be done for Krishna. Whatever you eat should be first offered to Krishna, etc. Whatever austerities you perform should be performed for the satisfaction of Krishna. Whatever charity you give should be for the service of Krishna. Yad Kuroshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jahosi, Tadasi, Yad Yad Tapas Yasi Kaunteya, Tad Kurashva Madarpanam. That's the teaching that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. It's a common question. People ask it a little different way. You know, well, you're taking an animal and you're taking a plant life. So, but many things, we don't take their life. And even if there's life taken, according to the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the design of the Supreme Lord, jivo, jivasya, jivanam. One living entity is food for another living entity. That's the design of this creation. So those that are in the human form of life, who are given dominion over the weaker forms of life, should give protection to, but still the sustenance is by nature's arrangement. So make the arrangement so that there's minimized suffering, and those things that you do accept, you offer them to Krishna. So the tree benefits, the carrot benefits, or the soul within those bodies benefit.
Two more.
Okay.
Bhagavad Gita only talks about five elements only.
It only talks about?
Five elements only. Like what are jiva?
Well, there are tattvas, there are categories. And under those five categories, there are subcategories.
But mainly talks about five elements.
I would say it differently. It speaks of, there are five topics. Under those five topics, there are many other topics that are subtopics of those five topics. When you study Bhagavad Gita through that lens, you know, there's what's proper activity, what is karma, vikarma, and akarma as subcategories of karma, and so on. There's varieties of prakriti. What are they? Where does prakriti come from? How is prakriti controlled, and so on? But, you know, it's under the heading of prakriti. Okay.
What is the difference between Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and Krishna Charitamrita? What is the main difference?
Undergraduate, graduate, and postgraduate. Exactly, that's what Prabhupada said. Bhagavad Gita is undergraduate. So welcome to our undergraduate school. And when you've completed undergraduate school, if you'd like to enroll, we'll accept you as a student for the graduate course. You know, 101, 201, 301, right? You have to prerequisite for 201 as you take 101. Okay?
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes.
Thank you very much for the class. The question I have is, like, in Srimad Bhagavatam, what we are following, is the first verse is the meditation on the Supreme, the Absolute.
The first verse is?
Is about the meditation on Supreme, the Absolute Truth, which is Vasudeva, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva.
Okay.
According to our Sampradaya Bhagavatam, like, the Bhagavatam which Sri Sampradaya follows, is not that their first verse is different or is the same, and they still consider Narayana, they don't consider Krishna.
They certainly consider Krishna. They consider Krishna as non-different from Narayan. However, they view from the Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana as their principal Shastra Praman. They view that Narayan is supreme, and there are avatars that descend within this world, one of whom is Krishna. So, and that's how they view.
And they don't consider Brahma Samhita?
I don't know if they consider Brahma Samhita. I know that they consider Narayan as supreme. And Narayan is in Vaikuntha. And there are avatars that enter in this world, one of whom is Krishna. And Nrisimha, and Vamana, and Varaha, and Matsya, and Kurma, and Parashurama. They worship them as forms of Narayana. That's how they view. Is that all right?
But according to us, that's like, for us, like, Krishna is absolute truth.
Yeah. Well, Narayana is the it's a bhav. It's a mood. And specifically, it's Aishvarya bhav. In Vaikuntha, how is Narayana regarded? With awe and majesty. And the worship is awe and majesty. Go to some temple of a Sri Vaishnava temple, and how do they worship? Awe and majesty. It's the mood. Because they're worshipping Narayana and Vaikuntha. And their scripture confirms their view. And the Vadas of Ramanujacharya confirmed that view, and so on. And their principal authority is Vishnu Puran and Padma Puran. And the followers of Lord Chaitanya, their mood is, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he conceals that identity in such a way that those who are his devotees in Vrindavan become overwhelmed with madhurya, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. So when Mother Jasoda looks inside Krishna's mouth and sees the entire cosmic manifestation, she thinks, I better go lie down, I'm seeing things. Because she can't, it clashes. It's in conflict with her motherly affection to see Krishna as the personality of Godhead, although he's exhibiting his Aishwarya, his opulence. He's lifting Govardhan Hill. And Nanda Maharaj thinks, Krishna's a cute boy, he's thinking he's lifting Govardhan Hill, but it's with these arms I'm lifting Govardhan Hill. But that's okay, he's a little boy, he can think like that.
But Lord Chaitanya went there to Sri Rangam temple, and like he made Prabhunanda Saraswati realize that Krishna is the Supreme, and still
that's okay. That's okay. he didn't, like, you know, have some attitude towards Ranganath. But he developed great love for Krishna in the association of a great lover of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. And he understood the Siddhanta behind why. And even Venkatabhata understood why, but he had his duty as the chief priest of Ranganath to stay and worship him. It was, you know, it was inherited through ancestral line that he do that. Yet he gave his son the blessing, please go to Vrindavan. You know, rational nitpicking doesn't fall into place when it comes to transcendental realization. You know, so don't go there. Otherwise it's like he'll spin out.
Madhvacharya came like around 1,500 years after Vyasadeva.
Yeah.
So, in
how did he go and meet Vyasadeva?
That I know. So in our disciplic succession, which is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita,
yeah,
it doesn't start with like as Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, then Sukadeva,
yeah,
Goswami.
Okay.
So it should start with them, right? So now it's starting with Madhvacharya, which came like 1,000 years after Vyasadeva.
That's okay, he went and heard from him. However much time passed, he had the capacity to get his association, and he did, and he heard from him. And he's a special personality himself, Madhvacharya, right? One of the three incarnations of Vayu. He's a very special personality. As is Hanuman, as is Bhim, very special personalities. But still he heard from Vyasadeva to confirm his understanding of Bhagavad Gita, to receive, and you know, he's following in that line of disciplic succession. You have something?
Maharaj, I wanted to understand more about the false ego. A devotee is also praying to a god every day, but he's also a dad, and he gets upset when the kid does something wrong.
No.
And then the false ego comes in picture, where he thinks that, oh, he's super, he's a dad, and or whatever. Or, so this...
Gotcha.
So how to control these things?
By purity. Starts with regulation, but it goes to purity. What does one of the very beginning instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Tongues titiksha svabharata. You know what titiksha means? Titiksha means tolerate. Matras parshas tu konteya sitoshna sukha dukada agama payom nityas. Tongues to tiksha svabharata, tolerate. There's this anger.
Yeah.
And where does anger come from? Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita also. Kamesha krodesha rajoguna samudbhava. It comes krodha. Is the younger brother of Kama, and they both have the same mother. Because they're brothers, they have the same mother, and the mother is contact with Rajoguna. What's Rajoguna? I want to enjoy. That's Rajoguna. Wait a minute, I didn't enjoy. I'm frustrated. You know what? You're the problem. It's all your fault. I didn't enjoy. It's the mode of passion that begins with desire, kama, and later transforms into anger, krodha. Kamesha, krodesha. Rajoguna, samudbhava. By contact with the mode of passion, one develops desire. When desire is fresh, so I'm the controller. Wait a minute, you're not listening to my controlling ship here. Controllership. What's wrong with you? Anger. How do you go back to the what came before that? What came before that? It's contact with the mode of passion. You're not the controller. You may be biologically the father, but you're a servant. Just, you know, put on the servant cap and be the servant of your children. Yeah, Dad. Come on, be the servant of us. But in fact, you are. You're the servant. Think of all the things you do to serve your children. You know, the pinch comes in. Well, after doing all this service, at least I deserve a little obedience here. Do you know how much I sacrificed for you? And you should give back to me some respect, you know what I mean? When I say, clean your room, go clean your room. Don't look at me like that. In a nutshell. So, but the philosophy is, the script, the teaching of Bhagavad Gita is, this false ego is adopting an identity that we're not. That's what false ego is. We're not the controller. We're not the enjoyer. We're a servant. Constitutionally. We're not Purusha, we're Prakriti. We're Paraprakriti, but you know, so is your son, he's Paraprakriti, and he's the Paraprakriti as am I of Krishna. So we're serving Krishna. I've got a role in my service to Krishna. He's got a role in service to Krishna. I'm not the controller. The biological father, yes, but that's part of my service. Here's a soul that's now my duty as father is to take that soul to Krishna, not get him to say, yes, Father, I'll do whatever you say. You know, the obedience to mother and father is part of the dynamic of parenthood, but it not, you know, by grabbing him by the collar and shaking him, by love, by service. And then, you know, anger dissipates because you're just serving. And you're leaving the results up to Krishna. Crying your level best, praying to Krishna, but not controlling, serving. You repose your desire upon Krishna's desire. And then go forward in the mood of service. And anger will go away. Yes.
Goloka Vrindavan is like the topmost
planet. Wow, we're going to Goloka Vrindavan. Go ahead.
There's the topmost planet, like in this in Vaikuntha itself, right? So I was just thinking. So like, what if someone tends to think that, you know, being a Krishna Bhakta is more kind of like they kind of have a feeling like a superior kind of feeling than like a Bhakta or something like that.
Hey, let's watch out for false ego. I'm a Krishna Bhakta. Like that? Yeah. So, what does Krishna think about somebody that thinks like that? This isn't my devotee. They may have some very distant attachment to me, that's okay. But that's not how my devotee, that's not, so I'll have to, you know, like, send them some good association or bang them on the side of the head or something so they don't, you know, carry on like that. Krishna doesn't like that pride in the heart of his devotee. He'll remove that pride by good instruction or by stick. Good instruction is much nicer. Okay.
Wait,
there's another one?
No, it's just like related to what.
Okay.
So like if someone like asked you like, yeah, like what if they, well, I mean, like my understanding isn't so clear, but I know Krishna, like, is it like a hierarchy?
Go ahead.
Does it mean, is it like a hierarchy, like Krishna is like topmost and then, is it like that? Because they're all...
Well, there's a hierarchy in this sense. Krishna is the avatari, and there's so many avatars. Krishna is the avatari. He's the source of all avatars. But how does Krishna regard Ram? And we should regard Ram like Krishna regards Ram. Or how our acharyas regard Ram and Nrisinga and, I mean, on Wednesday we're worshipping Ramachandra and every day we worship Lord Nrisingadev and so forth. So the avatars we're worshipping, but we're seeing them in relation to Krishna. And that, because that's like this other question of, you know, how others see scripture and how others see Krishna, not with pride in our heart but with clear discernment. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and the intimacy of love with Krishna is so wonderful, and that attracts our heart. And someone is a worshipper of Ram, and boy, the worshippers of Ram, they have such love for Ram. That's wonderful. He's attracted their heart. Like Lord Chaitanya, when he was traveling in South India, one Brahmana invited him to his home, you know the story. And the so Lord Chaitanya said, very well, I'll go take my midday bath and I'll come to your home. So he went to his home. The man was just sitting there. It was noon. Lord Chaitanya waited. It was 2 o'clock. He was just sitting there. Lord Chaitanya said, my dear Brahman, what is your intention? Are you invited me to your home for lunch and you're just sitting there? You have not made any effort to do any cooking. And the Brahmana said, how can I eat when Ravan has stolen Sita? I am going to fast until death. Well, the first he was, you know, Lakshman has gone to gather the vegetables from the forest. That was the first part. And Lord Chaitanya could understand this was his meditation. He's deeply absorbed in Ram Bhakti. So he then began the cooking. His meditation was completed and Lakshman brought the vegetables and he began the cooking. And then after cooking, he offered to his deity and Lord Chaitanya took and said, now you take. He said, no, I can't take. Why? How can I eat when I know that Ravan has stolen Sita? I will fast until death. It was just his absorption and devotion to Ram. So Lord Chaitanya, appreciating his mood of worship, said, my dear Brahman, it's not so. How is it possible for someone like Ravan to even touch Sita? It's not possible. I assure you it's not possible. So now please stop your fasting and take your salt. So he agreed. And he was constantly chanting Ram's name. Lord Chaitanya didn't go, oh, you're not a worshipper of Krishna like me. He was so much appreciating his devotion to Ram. Pure, pure love. So this, the status of pure love of God is all attractive. Yet, there's something very special about Krishna bhakti, which Lord Chaitanya knew and didn't impose upon this Ram Bhakta because he didn't want to disturb his loving devotion for Ram. So later, Lord Chaitanya, in the course of his travels, he went to the Adi Keshava temple where the brahmanas there were studying Brahma Samhita. No, they were studying another place. He received a copy of the Kurma Purana in which it says that Maya Sita was taken by Ravana. So he brought the Kurma Purana back and gave it to the brahmana. And when he came back, he said, it's true. What I said to you, here it is. Here's the scriptural authority for this. And instead of chanting Ram's name, the brahmana was now chanting Krishna's name. And Lord Chaitanya said, what happened? Before you were always chanting Ram's name, and now you're chanting Krishna's name. And the brahmana said, by your association, I am now spontaneous, although my whole life has been collecting stories of Ram and names of Ram, but now the only sound that comes to my mouth is Krishna, due to your association. Lord Chaitanya didn't twist his arm or, you know, look down on him, say, you know, something. By association, his devotion to Krishna became very strong, spontaneous. Okay? Certainly we should beware of pride and even, you know, egoism in a spiritual dress. I see two hands and then we're going to end. One, two, and then we're going to end. One.
It's more like a personal question. When you met the Srila Prabhupada for the first time, so what made you really promising and attractive?
When I first met Srila Prabhupada, I didn't know who he was. I was, you know, a very covered, conditioned soul college student. But something happened. Oh, I didn't know what that something was. It didn't even register on my radar screen. I just saw Prabhupada chanting in a program at a college campus and heard very briefly his discussion. I didn't know enough even that there was a center and he was going to speak for some number of additional days at that center. I didn't know that. I didn't go. I didn't, just like, but something happened. But I took the practices and read his books, and from the practices in his books, in short, I felt something. I felt greatly benefited, enormously. My life had completely changed around just from reading Prabhupada's books and chanting. And I felt very grateful. It's like I felt deeply indebted, and you know, I felt I must do something to repay back this wonderful gift that Prabhupada has given. And so forth. But gratitude was the turning point. A very profound gratitude.
I have two questions for yesterday's evening class. Is it okay to ask? Okay. One is, I want to understand the apparent contradiction, like bad things happen to good people. How do we look at good things happening to bad people? A lot of times we see that, and you know, people come and ask, no, I don't find good, I'm doing good, I'm getting all good things. How do I understand?
Same answer. In the past, there's some piety. Now they're misusing piety, but in the past there's some piety.
Are they not keep misusing because there is no, why am I here for them to understand that they are doing this? How do we really make them understand that? You
know? That's a separate question. Your first question is, this is your two questions?
No, I have one more. Okay.
How do we make them understand? By being pure, then you can help them understand. You can't make them do anything, but there'll be some transforming capacity if there's purity. If Krishna empowers your words because of purity of consciousness, then perhaps they'll understand. Like Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, when they approached Jagai and Madhai, the initial reaction was, first they chased them, they ran. The next day was throw a clay pot and hit him in the head. That wasn't a very civilized reply to, please try to understand. But because of his compassion and forgiveness, Madhai became melted, and Jagai was still, in a stupor. And then Lord Chaitanya Sudarshan Chakra sobered him up pretty quick.
The other question I had was, I understood why bad things happen to good people. Fortunately, by association, I have come to know that it's basically because of my endeavors, past endeavors of the karma. My question currently is, having realized that, especially one goes through that situation, there's a root cause. This is a root cause, but it's going to take a lot of long time to fix the root cause. In between, when somebody is trying out to address the root cause, he needs a temporary reprieve, basically, some sort of, because if you are, I personally feel I won't be able to focus on the root cause if I keep having the same nagging bad things happening. I also understand that if I get a reprieve, then I will try to forget and then I enjoy and go back. But this is, how do I see this?
Well, you don't, fortunately, you're not the controller. But somebody very capable is. And the reprieve is, the reactions are minimized. There's something that's just a reminder in proportion to what should be coming. That's the reprieve. But there's still reminders, so that you don't just, become, so casual that you pay no attention to the message. And there's encouragement, like we were speaking last night. There's encouragement that Krishna gives you a little encouragement. Although I have not qualified, Krishna is still giving me this realization or facility or relief or something. Krishna is giving me encouragement. It's very personal. So, your antenna's up. You're catching the signal. Krishna is being very merciful. And then there, the gratitude wells in the heart, and that carries you beyond the tribulation due to my past misdeeds. I want to edit this idea of, due to my past karmas. The message, one of the messages I tried, maybe I'll emphasize it again, tried to present was, it's not just bad karma, but it's even more root than bad karma is, we have free will, and simply trying to be an enjoyer of matter, which is not our position. Sat asat yoni janasu. Because even we're good persons, there's going to be some mode of ignorance in that quality of goodness and some reaction for that quality of goodness, the quality of ignorance. And sometimes ignorance will predominate, although overall goodness may be there. And there's a reaction for that too. In course of time, the bucket of white paint that you put in some droppers full of blue and red and blue and red and blue and red, it gets off-white. Then it becomes very discolored. And how much quantity of white do you have to put in to make it all white again? The answer is, it's still going to be off-colored. Until we, have got that blue and red extractor going. Then it's all white again. So that certainly will take some time. And therefore, we have to tolerate. That's the big, isn't it? Same as before. It's one of the beginning instructions that Krishna gave. Tamsa tiksha sabharata. But then in a more purified state, we not just tolerate it, but we rise above it. And in a more advanced state, we experience such transcendental happiness, there's no, you may take notice of something, but your attention doesn't become distracted by that something. You just take it in stride. You accept this is a reaction, but that my mind not deviate one fraction from the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. And it's not just a nice phrase, it's something that's in your heart. And that's gradual. So the beginning, back to your question, is you tolerate. And the contrast of tolerate is you get angry. Didn't go the way that I wanted it. I mean, I'm the controller. After all, I've done all these good deeds. Look at this bad thing that happened. Tolerate it. Just go to the mode of goodness. Cultivate it. Strive for that quality of goodness. And withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness in sat. Practice, like we heard before, abhyasa, the main messages, abhyasa, just continual practice and practice and practice. With proper spiritual practice and proper guidance and hearing and purification, and it becomes easier in the course of time. Right? Confirmed. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Last question.
Is it very easy to control senses, like we get grief, happiness, or whatever it is, like all the feelings that
goes
along with people?
Okay.
In Bhagavad Gita, I saw like. There are so many points Krishna has said.
There's so many points that Krishna said?
Yeah, but, but in reality it's very tough to follow. Which one is the best process to be followed?
The best process? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Now why do I say that? Because we can at once access the shelter in the realm of transcendence. Even I'm down here struggling with that which is very difficult. At once, Krishna is so kind, at once I can access Him personally. So I may be very weak and struggling, but Krishna is very strong and He can give that strength beyond my capacity and purify my heart. And so in addition to strength, there's purity and purification. And you continue with your abhyasa, as you say, struggle to apply that which Krishna says, but then take shelter of Krishna for the strength to do so. Gradually. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of fever. When you have fever, what happens to your hunger? No hunger. People can say, oh, this is your favorite food, would you like some? No. I have no appetite. That's part of the symptom of fever. And the very thing that would bring a cure of nourishment to the body, you can't take because there's no appetite. So what do? Take fever medicine. Follow the prescription of the doctor. In time, by following proper medicine and just through passage of time, the fever may subside. And then slowly, a little bit you can eat. And slowly, strength comes again to the body. And slowly, natural health is restored. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares our condition where due to offenses or you can say mistakes that have weakened us, we can regain strength. Again, taking shelter of our Master, our Supreme Shelter, Krishna, under guidance, with nice instruction from Bhagavad Gita. And it works. It really works. It's good medicine, good diet, proper diagnosis, excellent physician, and health can be restored, even where we're weak and it's difficult. Okay, thank you all very much. Jiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.